This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boon Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation, the land on which we're lucky enough to raise our sons and daughters. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land. This episode of Witching Hour is brought to you by The Inara, a premium online shopping and lifestyle publication tailored for pregnancy, motherhood, and beyond.
Just a note before we get started to say that our hearts are really heavy today, as I'm sure a lot of yours are. It's hard to even talk about or think about what happened in Bondi over the weekend. I don't know many mothers that don't have a set of shops or a shopping centre that they like to go to, either for a bit of escapism when the day's feeling a little bit long, maybe it's raining, maybe the baby is crying to a point where you don't feel like you can go anywhere except for a loud shopping centre. It's a place where we're meant to feel safe. It's a place where we often put in our podcasts like Ready or Not and Witching Hour. And I know a lot of you are based in Sydney. I know a lot of you listen to our podcasts when you're out with the pram at these shopping centres. And I feel sickened that a lot of us today perhaps feel like that's been taken away from us. This episode was recorded before it happened, so you won't hear mention of it. But from what happened in Bondi, from Sydney to Gaza, we're just sick of seeing women, babies, mothers, people in general feeling unsafe and being attacked in spaces that they shouldn't. It's devastating, and I hope this episode brings some light to what is a really sad day.
Hello and welcome to Witching Hour, the podcast that looks at what's exciting, delighting, intriguing and frustrating us when it comes to making work work. I am Lou, and Posy is there if you can hear her. She's in the carrier. Let's see how we go.
And I am Loz.
I have a few updates for you today. I mentioned good chunks of sleep last time, and it's like Posy's trying to do it just before we record. The episode that went live today, so last week by the time this goes live, just to be confusing, was recorded 2 weeks ago. Last night she did a 6-hour chunk, but it had been the only good chunk in that period. So for any parents out there that are like, fuck's sake, your baby's having 5 or 6 hour chunks, mine's not, don't worry, it's few and far between, happens just before Witching Hour recordings, basically.
That's beautiful.
Secondly, from me, in the last episode, we sort of laughed, and no one's actually even mentioned this, but it's just something that I've become more conscious of given my family and the people in my family. Last week, we sort of very lightly laughed about kids that might stay at home forever. And I just wanted to acknowledge for people whose kids might be at home with them forever for other reasons that we totally acknowledge that. We weren't trying to laugh at that. So I just wanted a little bit of housekeeping there. And then two dumb things that I've done this morning where I was just like, get your head in water, Lucy. Got the eggs out, put them back without getting my actual eggs out of the carton to cook my breakfast. Thought I'd got them out. And then I got two lots of cutlery out, honestly, within a few seconds of each other to eat said eggs. So I had two forks to choose from and two knives to choose from, which was great.
And a breakfast of air. How nice.
Yeah, and that's how, yeah, boiled water was what I ate. So that's how my morning started. Should we get into it, what we're talking about today? So today, 10 impressive questions to ask in a job interview. I'm really interested in this because I used to be that person that thought it was good to ask nothing. I thought it made you look like the easiest person in the room. So joke's on me. Can't wait to hear about that. Secondly, no parent can make home-cooked meals all the time. Also looking forward to that. Resonates deeply. And lastly, straight from the Instagram Ready or Not community, your answers to our poll all about screen time and staying present. The elusive, noble goal of staying present. It's a hard one. Let's get into it, Lozzie.
10 impressive questions to ask in a job interview. This article was so good. Also, I've just gone through an interview process, which I can update you all on hopefully soon. And it's something that someone said to me once, don't ever not ask a question.
That literally was me forever. I was like, nah, no questions. You moron, Lucy, ask something.
No, I think if you don't have any, don't ask any. But I know that this article stood out to me because there's something to be said in asking the questions that you want to know the answer to, but you don't know how to word it. So in this article, it starts by saying, when I'm interviewing people for jobs, I'm always amazed by how many of them tell me they don't have any questions prepared for me. Part of the problem is that people aren't sure how to ask about the things they'd most like to know. For example, are you a horrible micromanager? Is working here a nightmare? They also worry that interviewers will read negative things into the questions they choose to ask. Like if you ask about what hours most people work, will you look like a slacker?
Which is particularly relevant for mothers, right? It's like, where's the flexibility? Will I look lazy or just like someone that respects my own time?
I mean, the two most things I think people that listen to this podcast would probably ask when they're going for a new job, well, not ask, but think about, is how flexible is it and do you have paid maternity leave? Like the two questions that are like taboo.
100%.
In this article, the writer outlines 10 strong questions that will get you useful insights into whether the job is right for you. I cannot be bothered to go through all 10. I thought some were good and some were just no bueno, like I wouldn't ask, so I'm not going to repeat them. But I'll go into my top 4 favourites and we'll go into them in a bit of depth as to why I think they're good. Number 1, how will you measure the success of the person in this position? Tick, excellent question. You may find out that while the job posting listed 12 different responsibilities, your success, in fact, hinges on just 2 of them, 1 of them, 3 of them, so on. Or that the PD dramatically understated the importance of 1 of them, or that the hiring manager is battling with her own boss about expectations for the role, or even that the manager has no bloody idea what success looks like, which is probably a sign to proceed with caution. But regardless of how many responsibilities are listed in the job that you're applying for, your manager, with no doubt in my mind, is probably most focused on something specifically. So for example, if you're applying for a role in finance and you're getting slammed and you're understaffed, I mean, she's not going to tell you those things, but what she might tell you is that what's really important to her is that you liaise with creditors and let them know when they're going to get paid. I.e. most people are getting paid late. You gotta do the work and sadly be the punching bag. Things like that, I feel like you can read through the lines a bit. Oh, is that the right saying? Read through the lines?
I think that is the right saying. It sounds good to me, even if it's not the right saying. I think you've nailed it. I am not good at sayings though. I'll be like, oh, you talk the leg off and elbow instead of the chair. So don't listen to me.
That's the first question, which I think is good. This one I also thought was good. What are some of the challenges you expect the person in this position to face? This will give you a good insight into, I don't want to say workplace politics, but what the roadblockers are going to be in your role. So again, know that most hiring managers aren't always honest because they usually are interviewing you because they would like you or another interviewee to get the job. They're not going to be like, my God, this place is a nightmare. But when you're talking about challenges, you could kind of be a bit more direct and be like, the previous person in the role, were there any particular roadblocks she had? Are you finding it difficult to get anything across the line? There's different ways that you can word it. But I also think it shows when you ask a question like that, that you're positioning yourself to be someone that can fix the problems. Or not fix them, but you're capable of being in an organization.
You're interested in tackling challenges. This is a really interesting one for me because I went from small business to heaps of contract work where you're not in the day-to-day of that business, you're just a freelancer, to then going into a permanent role in a big organization. And I never appreciated why on PDs they mentioned experience working in a large organization. Because if I asked a question like this, I may have been a little bit more privy into the roadblocks that are unique to large organizations because they're so different to small business. Like I could never have anticipated the difference between working for a small business or a big business. So I think this is a really good question.
Exactly. Third question, thinking back to people you've seen do this work previously, what differentiated the ones who were good from the ones who were really great at it? Elite. That is an elite question. So the writer says, obviously, just asking doesn't guarantee that you'll do extraordinary work, but it does make you sound like someone who's at least aiming for that. Someone who's conscientious and driven. Those are compelling things in a hiring manager's eyes. I also think when you position a question like that, similar to the last question, you're suggesting about yourself that you don't just want to go in and do the job, you want to excel at the job. Super A+, tick, tick, tick. I'm hiring you. Like if you want to go above and beyond, like please take the job.
Take it off me.
Yeah. And the next one, and I think this is one that everybody wants to ask, but no one knows how to frame, because when you ask it in a way that sounds like do you enjoy working here? Is it a good culture? Very rarely in an interview process are you going to get someone that says, no, it's fucking horrible.
Run while you can.
Run while you can. Don't apply. Instead, what you could say is, how would you describe the culture here? What types of people tend to thrive here and what type don't do as well?
I love that idea of what type of people tend to thrive here. That's a really interesting way to ask.
What I think you'll find if you read into that question is when you're asking someone something specific like who thrives and who doesn't, they're more likely going to give you an answer that's equally as specific as a question you've just posed. If that were me and I asked that question and the response was, oh, people that just get shit done, I'd be like, oh, great. Ideal. That's who I am. Or if they say, oh, you know, we're really looking for someone that's a self-starter, that, you know, is happy to work in ambiguous situations, that doesn't require much direction. I think all of those things are great, but I'd probably deep dive more into that. Okay, could you give me an example of what you mean by A, B, C?
It also gives you an idea of the job description more too, probably, because it's like you are going to have to go out there and figure shit out rather than we're a really well-oiled machine and you're just going to pick up these projects.
Yes, you also don't want to be in a situation though, if you're relatively new in your career, where you're stepping into an organization that says, oh, ambitious, self-starter, rah, rah, and then you get there and you're like, oh, okay, what's day one? Is your laptop? Figure it out.
Do you know what else I like about this question is that it might make them think, if it's a job you want, for example, it might make them think of the type of person that you are. And if you are, right, like they might be starting to think through it and going, oh, yeah, we need someone with a bit of confidence and that's really direct. Actually, this person has been really confident and direct in their interview. So it might even position you better by helping them identify exactly who they want, even beyond how they've thought about it.
Yes. And this is my personal favorite. And this isn't even in the article, but I'm just going to slip it on in.
Oh, it's your personal favorite because you think you're smarter than this writer, don't you?
I don't. My favorite, and someone said this to me years ago, was the best question that you can ask is, do you have any feedback for me? Or do you have any reservations about me in this role? Because the minute you put that out, and it feels really nerve-wracking to ask, because once you've said it, the likelihood is you may get a response that is negative, that's like, oh, look, we love this and this and that about you, but we're unsure whether you'd be challenged in the role, or we're unsure whether your experience is right for the role. Then you could be more specific. We're unsure whether your copywriting experience is adequate enough to fulfill the requirements of this role. It gives you an opportunity to eliminate any doubt. And once you've eliminated that doubt, and particularly when it's at the end of the conversation, they walk away usually thinking, okay, well, we don't necessarily have that many reservations around this person.
That's a really great question, because leaving on that note, if they're interviewing a few people, they don't remember everything. So if you leave it on that note, that might be like the closing argument in a courtroom that helps win a case. Like it's your closing argument that they might remember.
I just think it's a good one to say, because I think it also puts you a little bit out of your comfort zone. And in every organization I've worked with or for, one of the key things that people always talk about is feedback and getting feedback, making sure that you can action feedback. Well, case in point, my friend, case in point.
And you have to be comfortable with it. And if you're not getting a job, you need to start to identify why.
Loose.
No, seriously, that's not, why is that funny?
It's true though, you're right. Imagine if someone gave you feedback and off the back of an interview and they said, look, we really like you, but from what you said, your experience is nowhere near what we're looking for. What would you say to that? Oh, okay, thanks. I'll apply for different jobs.
I'd just
say,
yeah, I probably would. I'd probably be like, that's right. You're right. I'm wrong.
Bye.
I'm underqualified. I'm a loser. I've got imposter syndrome already. I'm going to apply for less high jobs. Less high. Wow. No wonder no one's hiring me.
No one's
going
to say that. Anyway, I thought these were great, because if you're like me and either searching for a role, considering a new role, interviewing for a new role, particularly if you're interviewing at multiple companies, it can feel very exhausting. And the same question comes about all the time when people say, do you have any questions for me? And you're trying to rack your brain. You're like, bloody hell, not really. Like, I know the job. I know I can do it. These are some good conversation starters to have up your sleeve. Write them down. Say them. They won't make you look like a peanut. They open up the conversation further. they position you in a good light, I think they're winners.
I've not often thought about how asking the right questions positions you, as opposed to if you feel like you have got a good understanding from what they've told you, it's a great opportunity to do almost a bit of branding of yourself as a person in that job. So it's really smart. You've given me some food for thought, which is a very perfect segue,
yes,
might I add, and very unintentional into our next topic.
No parent can make home-cooked meals all the time. Baby food pouches are unavoidable. God, I want to preface this by saying this struck a real chord with me recently, because sometimes I CBF and I'm out in public and Zave's sucking on something. He's 14 months. He's actually quite capable. No, he's not 14 months. 16 months. Oh, I can't even remember the months. I just want to say he's like closer to 1.5.
Fucking hell, he's 16 months. No wonder he looked so big yesterday.
But sometimes I just can't be bothered. He's capable of eating himself. Sometimes he doesn't want to. Sometimes I can't be bothered. I just give him a pouch. And the looks that I get around it, because I feel like, A, he looks a bit older than what he is because he's a bit bigger. But B, I don't know if it's like a shameful thing or other mums judge what pouches people are eating. Like, I don't give a shit.
Are you actually noticing people stare at him when he's having a pouch?
Oh, I reckon the other day when I was at the supermarket, he was getting irritated. So I thought, you know what? I'm just going to get him a pouch.
Who on earth can judge a mother for that in the supermarket with their kid trying to keep them quiet?
I know, but I also think sometimes those pouches, you know how they say 4 months, 8 months, whatever, however many months, they don't really go past that. I've got a 1.5-year-old chugging an apple puree that says 4 months plus. Like, I know it's not a great look, but also far out. Let the kid live.
Oh, Ray's still on them. Don't worry about that. And he's nearly two.
This is why this article stood out to me. It starts by saying, on Sunday evening, I fed a bowl of salmon, broccoli and rice to my 8-month-old son. Or rather, I attempted to. The fish went flying, greens and grains splattered across the wall, and half an hour later, bedtime drew near and he hadn't eaten a thing. Feels, sister, feels.
Oh, this, yeah, speaks straight to my soul.
Exasperated, I handed him a baby food pouch and he inhaled every last drop of apple, raspberry, squash, carrot, mush, whatever. For harried parents like myself, baby pouches are a lifeline. Agreed. But after my son slurped up all the goo and quickly went to sleep, I felt more guilty than relieved. Giving him a pouch felt like giving up or taking a shortcut. No parent has the time or energy to make healthy, homemade food all of the time. But that doesn't stop Americans, this writer's obviously American, and I would say Australians, from still thinking they need to try harder. That can leave parents stuck between a pouch and a hard place. I wanted to talk to you about this, Lou, because I'd love to get your theory on it. I personally am all for pouches. I think they're convenient. I think they're easy. I don't think they should replace every meal, but it's also really hard when you're in the midst of parenting kids that are just starting to learn to eat, having gone from breastfeeding, bottle feeding, whatever, to understand how much they're actually eating. Like, do you know what I mean? When you first start food, they have like a crust of toast or whatever and they're sucking on it and then they piff it and you're like, did they get anything from that? Yes.
I have no idea what you ate.
Yes.
That always happens, especially because we have our dog, Louie. I'm like, what did you eat and what did Ray eat? I can't really tell. Whereas Louie doesn't know how to suck on a pouch. So that's a really great bonus for that. I am all for it. I have tried on occasion to get Ray to eat gorgeous meals that he won't touch. His diet pretty much consists of white food. It's cheese, it's yogurt, it's bread. It's nearly impossible at the moment to give him something else. So in a pouch, there can be hidden veg or hidden fruit. Don't even get me started on the time that it can save a busy parent. But also the soul-crushing feeling of making your child a healthy, balanced meal that then they then don't touch is pretty destroying at times.
So I want to say this, and I feel like I need to say this. One piece of research says, the problem with food pouches is that they are often promoted as providing a large portion of a child's daily nutritional intake, despite being an inadequate source of nutrients when used regularly and solely. So we all know, don't let your kids live off chocolate, lollies, Coca-Cola, food pouches. Like, we get it. Everyone understands. But I don't think there should be a shame around people either outsourcing and being like, you know what, for lunch he's going to have the weird chicken and rice. It tastes a bit funky, but kids seem to like it. It's so sick.
How gross is that? I tried that once. One of those brands.
Ugh. But I mean, Zave laps it up. So, you know, You got to do what you got to do. Like if that's where you're coming from and you just need a quick little treat, just do it.
Amen. Do less. Use it for the times where you're time poor or when they're just throwing the food on the wall. We can't emotionally navigate that at all times. I am all for doing a bit less when it works and not always doing it.
Redefining how modern mothers consume content, the Inara offers a diverse range of features, interviews, and fashion edits that cater to every stage of motherhood while celebrating individual style and identity. And today, we're bringing our Witching Hour listeners a special offer as the Inara gets ready to launch their styling services.
To claim 30% off a styling experience that can be done virtually or in person in Sydney and is specifically tailored to those who are pregnant, postpartum, or just struggling to define their style as a mother, email hello@theinara.com, that's INARRA, and mention Witching Hour.
Okay, Loz, in community today, something that's been swirling around my brain a lot, and that is the fact that I am spending too much time on my phone because I'm breastfeeding. I'm really excited about how quickly Ready or Not and Witching Hour are growing. We've been working on these go-to guides that are now out there in the big bad world.
Yes.
And there's a lot going on. There's a lot to be excited about. There's a lot to be distracted by too. But I also, on the flip side, want to be present with my children. I know how quick all of this is going to go. And that Lucy in 5 years will look back and wish she could do it again. And no, I don't think that we can just present our way through our kids not growing up. But I do want to stop looking at my phone every 5 seconds that I'm with Ray, especially because he's at the age where he wants to take the phone off me if I'm on it and watch Cars or Nemo or whatever it is that he's into at the moment. So I gave Paula's options for what this subject would be today. And this was the resounding favorite. So everyone wanted to talk about screen time related to motherhood as much as to paid work. So here we go. First question, whether it's for work, life admin, or just scrolling, do you look at your phone or laptop screens more than you'd like to with your kids? So when your kids are around, what percentage of people do you think said yes? 97% of people said yes. So only 3% of the population, and this was a huge poll, over 300 answers, only 3% of the pollers said that they sort of had that clocked. My hat goes off to those people, by the way. Again, another group of people that I need to take out for a drink and learn from. Second question, if you're breastfeeding, but really I added the caveat that anyone feeding their baby anyway, if you are feeding a baby via milk, we'll say, are you most likely scrolling while doing so? What percentage of people do you think said yes?
99.
76 said yes, but 15 said trying not to be. So they're starting to maybe do it a little bit less, yeah. But we'll add them in. So you're pretty much bang on.
Yeah.
And 10% of people said no. What do you think majority of those people that said no are doing? Do you think they're listening to a podcast?
Watching Netflix.
Reading or watching something? Okay, pretty much all of those answers had the equal amount of voters. So 29% are reading, 24% are watching something, 29% are listening to a podcast, and other DM us was the fourth option. That was 17%. And my heart goes out to these parents. Most of them said that they needed to focus so much on breastfeeding in those early days, which I feel like is something you probably could have resonated with back in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
That they couldn't really do anything else in that time, which can be really stressful. So heart goes out to them. Thanks for sharing that. It's always good to think of something that's not necessarily in your reality, I guess. Do you find yourself getting on your phone or laptop to do paid work during time allocated to be spent with your kids? What's your answer to that first?
Yes.
I know actually that that's a yes because we do this sometimes when our kids are around.
It's such a, I hate that I do it too because it makes me angry and I'll explain why. If my mind is focused on doing work and I'm like, I need to get this freaking email out. And Sienna's like, mom, and say screaming or like drawing on something, who's touching something. All I can think about is to shut up. Like, yes. Be quiet. Don't come near me. I just need to get this done. And it makes me a horrible person. And I'm also like, far out. Who's that? No one cares that email's going through. No one's.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because the paradox is that it's not always a choice, but in our situation, I'd say it is. If we've chosen for that to be a kid day, it's because we want that time with our kids. Like, otherwise we would have chosen to put them in daycare or whatever. So it's the paradox of being like, I really want to respond to this email, but also, can you shut the fuck up? Even though I wanted to be with you today.
It is really frustrating as a parent, and I'm just going to say it because I reckon it's true. Everyone has this notion of wanting to spend time with their kids. I don't know anybody that doesn't. Everyone wants to have this like whimsical, romantic idea of spending time with your kids. Then you spend a full day with them and you're like, far out. That was...
I know. There's beautiful moments, but it's a lot.
Tiring. You want them to nap because I just need 2 minutes to myself. And it's even more difficult when you've got a pressing deadline or something in the back of your mind. And I know workplace say, oh, you know, set your boundaries, rah, rah, rah. But if someone's hounding you to get something done, your boundary is going to slip and you want to please. You know, I don't know anyone that's going to be like, sorry, I'll wait till next week to do that.
I know. And sometimes, which one person answered the next question with this, sometimes it's too stressful in your mind to leave it unresponded. Like, I would feel better if I've just ticked it off and then get back to my kids.
Agreed.
So that can be a really hard one too. So these were the answers first. So it was yep, constantly. Sometimes or not really. What percentage of people do you think said that they're constantly checking their phone in relation to paid work while they're with their kids?
I mean, I also think this is tricky because if people are like me, I get notifications. So like I get Slack notifications, email, like I don't turn it off on the day that I am not at work. Do you know what I mean? So I feel like I'm not constantly, but maybe like 20% would be actively, but inactively, like subconsciously, I'm checking it because if a notification comes up during the day, I'll flick up to look at it.
We just had a tiny interlude because I'm literally standing up feeding Posey while trying to make work work. So talk about being distracted. So the sometimes crowd is 42%. They sometimes check, which is sort of what you were talking about, subconsciously checking.
Yes.
29% are constantly checking. Which, so you're pretty close with that. And then not really is 29%. So those people are probably getting a little bit better about their setting boundaries. Do you have an auto reply on your email on the days that you're not?
No, my communications now aren't really via email. So like most of my things would be through Slack. And one of the challenges with Slack is that it's a global platform and it's always on. It's like a messaging service, like WhatsApp.
Yeah, but you can still set little notifications, can't you, about do not disturb or whatnot? I use Teams with Microsoft.
You can.
And you could put do not disturbs on and people would know that you were basically in quiet mode.
But you'd need to do it in the morning with Slack. So you'd need to physically log in and go into Slack to set your notifications to silent for that day. And then at the end of the day, you take it off. And I just can't be bothered doing that.
I reckon that it's got a better system than that. I reckon you just haven't learned it. Surely Slack has an automated sort of out of office system like Teams.
You can put an automated icon on to say out of the office on Wednesdays or whatever, but it's not going to stop people from Slacking you.
No, but at least it takes the pressure off the person who is at home with their kids of their colleague wondering when they're going to hear back from them. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, they're not there today.
But it doesn't take the pressure off you wanting to read it. And I think that actually is the main problem.
No, I reckon it does take a bit of that pressure off. As in, I would still want to read it from a curiosity standpoint, but I would know that there's no confusion on that person's end of whether today was a paid work day or not. They would see that I was offline or out of office.
Yes, true.
See what I'm saying?
For that person, yes.
But I do know what you mean in terms of like the curiosity angle. Of course, you would still want to see it, unfortunately. So I do agree with that one. Let's keep moving because we are really getting in the minutiae of all these answers, aren't we? Do you feel guilty for not staying across emails and comms on your days off of paid work? What percentage of people do you think said, yep, can't help it?
60%.
30% said can't help, yep, can't help it. But 31% said sometimes. So you could potentially say that you were pretty bang on there. And then 39% said, nope, they're not paying me for those days, so I ain't working. And I love those people.
Yeah, that I understand. Yeah.
One person wrote back and said, it's not so much guilt. It's just that it feels better for me if I stay across it so that the next day isn't really overwhelming. And that's something that I totally resonate with. It's like not letting it all pile up too much on your day off of paid work so that you come back to be inundated, playing catch up for the first hour of your work day the next day, for example.
I do find it incredibly frustrating when, let's just say you're working 3 days or 4 days. So you have that day off. Well, not off, but you have the day off paid work.
Off of paid work, yeah.
Yeah, and then you're working on a project and you come back to like a 9 or 10 a.m. meeting the next day. I'm like,
give me a moment.
What are you doing? You sent me 1,000 emails. I can't get through all these before this. I'm like, why?
Yeah.
Why are you doing this to me?
It actually reminds me of that great Instagram thread that you sent me that was saying how we're not all meant to work at the speed that Wi-Fi works at. I thought that was really interesting. And this is a perfect example.
Yes, we should discuss that next week.
Let's do it. Next question. Do you have good boundaries in place that mean your days with your kids never bleed into paid work days and vice versa? What percentage of people do you think said, yep, versus I wish?
I think 50% of people would have boundaries in place, but I just don't know that everyone respects those boundaries. If everyone truly respected your boundaries of not being at work that day, do you know what they would do? They would not email and they would not Slack you or use Microsoft Teams or whatever. Instead, they would schedule it to send the next day.
Yes, which you can do.
Absolutely you can do, but people don't do it.
This is something I really struggle with you and I, because we used to speak so much regardless of all of this, and we're family basically and we're friends.
Yes.
So sometimes when I message you, it's because I would anyway, but then I'm like, this is about work. Leave her and wait till you chat to her. That's a really tricky one.
It is tricky. I mean, I never care in that situation, but I think it's more in stressful situations.
But as we grow, it will become a thing where does eventually become stressful. You know what I mean? So it is something that we'll eventually have to work through, because I don't want you to just be like, fucking Lucy messaging me on a Saturday morning about something that can wait till Monday. So I think that scheduling email things is actually huge. I love that. Next question was, if you do have good boundaries in place or good systems, what are they? I'll read some of the top answers. One person, which is a really good friend of mine, she mentioned this to me recently, is that she's now leaving her work laptop at work, which I have a lot of respect for. So you can obviously still receive those emails through your phone, but you can't action too much. You'll have to just write down notes of anything that comes to mind.
Do you know what though? That actually stresses me out. Okay, I'm going to explain why though. You know when you get an email sometimes, but you need to see it on desktop? Like someone sent you a presentation, then you try and open your phone. You're like, oh, no.
I'm driving to the office right now.
I know. See, but this is a reason why you shouldn't have it, because you don't really need to look at it. So kudos to your friend then.
So I think it's almost like that teething process would be really hard, but then eventually you might get used to it and realize that you shouldn't be looking at it at that time anyway.
Yes.
So it is a really good tip. You just have to get past that getting used to it, I would say. Someone else has work days on their email signature and team status, so it's quite literally always there, even on the days that they do work, so that people are aware. I remember seeing that well before motherhood when I was working at Cricket Australia, and it made me very aware of when that person could respond to me and would respond to me. And it does set expectations, which I think is great, because I think that does help the working parent know that people know what to expect from them and when.
Yep, agreed.
Someone else said, I can't do either, that is being a mum or working well, if I'm doing both at the same time. So I stopped doing both at the same time. It's one of those ones that's really much easier said than done, but fuck, that's my goal, to like never do work when I've got my kids with me and vice versa.
I know, but I know this is horrible, but I am also going to say, sometimes when I have my children and I'm not getting thanks, praise, gratification, I see a quick little something come up and I know I can do it. And someone's like, thank you so much, Loz. Like, thanks so much for doing that. I know it's your day with your kids. I really appreciate it. I almost want that validation.
How problematic is that though? And I'm not criticizing you.
I know.
We're all like that, but that is so, it's so problematic. But we're all safe. I do that too. I'm right there with you, sweetheart. So another obvious one, but one that I've never actioned before, and that is a really good one, is to turn off notifications on your non-paid work days.
Yes.
So then you can't even see it. It would be like not having your laptop at home. It would be that initial teething process of feeling like fucking stressed by it probably, and then eventually maybe getting used to it. And then another person said, and this is more in the realm of being present with your child, in just a more general sense, is not taking the phone to bath time. And I thought that was a great one, because then that's just sort of 20 minutes of focus time and connection. And then, you know, if your kid's a certain age, you can't really leave them in there even for a second without you in there, depending on how old they are. So then it's forced time without your phone and you can't even think to get it. Because the problem with me is I don't even realize I've picked it up again and all of a sudden it's in my hand.
Do you know what I often do during bath time that I would recommend? I often pour myself a glass of wine or even just a sparkling water with a bit of lemon just to make it quite fancy. And I sit on my toilet with the lid down, obviously, as a little stool. I just enjoy my life watching my kids be happy in the bath. And that really does fill my cup.
A bit of happy hour. I think that's great. I've definitely done that with wine and water also. And it's a happy hour for all. Alcohol or no alcohol?
It is.
Does your child mostly want to play with your phone when they see you on it? Firstly, does Sienna or Zave try to get your phone if you're on it?
Yes.
So does Ray. And it definitely makes me, not because I'm anti-screens altogether, but it definitely makes me aware of my use and of, you know, if I don't want to see him looking down at a phone all the time, who am I to pick up mine? Like,
yeah,
it's sometimes you're just like, get off the fucking phone. But then I'm like, true. Darling, where does he learn that from? He learns it from you.
Yes.
What percentage of people do you think said yes to that?
High. 70.
Only 40%.
What?
I would have thought way higher. So I guess the context we don't have is if they're already watching something on TV and that's when the mum or daddy's sitting on their phone. We don't know that context. So that might be a different screen that they're using. Maybe they're on the iPad.
Or maybe they're just 6 weeks old.
Maybe they're 6 weeks
old. They can't see more than 30 centimetres.
They haven't figured out the addiction of a phone yet. So then 26% said sometimes and 33% said not really. I'm going to assume lots of them are newborns. Do you find it hard to stay present with your kids when you're excited about something happening at paid work?
I mean, how excited are we getting about paid? Like,
oh my God, I get so excited by Ready or Not stuff. It's like all I do with my whole life.
No. But I mean, sorry, I was thinking more of like, I think it's different when you work for yourself because everything's exciting. But when you're working for a large corporation, like, I don't know what's
I think that,
that
comes
exciting.
Down to you having a better mindset about your boundaries, though. Someone like me would still be like, oh, I've got to do this, got to do that, got to do this, got to do that.
I mean, yes, I do. I would get excited. If it was something that was exciting me, yes.
You would get distracted, you mean?
Yeah, I would get distracted. I'd be like, oh, how good, like, we made that sale or how good we hit that milestone or something.
Yeah.
But genuinely, like, the older I get, unless it's stuff for myself.
Yeah.
I just feel like work can be work. Like it's shelved in a different space in my mind.
Oh, I wish I was more like you. That's a great mindset to have. It's way healthier than being obsessed by things. So I love that. Hopefully people are a bit more like you, but they're actually not. I'll tell you, I've got the answers right here. So I don't know why I said that. So 66% of people get distracted when they're excited by something at paid work. 34% of people don't get distracted because they are probably more in your camp. Like, whatever, it's not that exciting. It can wait. Those people are my lords and I hope to be one of their disciples one day. Next, do you have any practices that help you stay a bit more present with your kids? Do you have any before I get into it, Lozzie?
I mean, I don't even have to. My children demand it.
I love it. You have no choice but to stay present because I am yelling in your face.
Exactly. And I feel like when I'm trying to, if I'm desperate to send an email or I'm desperate to do something, most likely Sienna will be climbing on top of me trying to touch the keyboard. I can't physically do it. So I have to think to myself, okay, yeah, it's not worth it. What about you?
My only practices to not be distracted is just to not have the phone or the laptop in the same room that I'm in. That's the only way. Otherwise, I don't even realize I'm doing it. I pick up my phone as though I'm on autopilot. So some of the tips on this one from our community is put the phone away completely, which is just what I've said and what a lot of the answers are. A lot of people say it seems so basic, but it's the only way. Someone else said, which I think is a really nice reminder too when it comes to feeling guilty about this stuff, is try to remember they only need 10 minutes of undivided attention to fill their cup. 10 is tiny. So it doesn't have to be 3 hours of play on the ground where you, gee, that would honestly break my back if I played with Ray on the ground for 3 hours.
That would break my mind.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd break everything. I'd be broken. Yeah. It doesn't have to be this 3 hour long feast of play. It can be little moments. And then if you do desperately need to respond to something or if you need to do it just for your own sake, then you do it and then you get back to it. But I guess it's just picking one and then picking the other that might be the key. Someone else had the great tip of allocating set times. And I've actually done that because at the moment I'm only working for myself. I've literally set up my week. So on a Tuesday afternoon, which is a day that I have both kids. When Hayden gets home at around 4, I'm going to do paid work from 4 till 6. And that's a block of time. And then I obviously have Posey full time at the moment.
Yes.
On Wednesdays and Thursdays when Ray is at daycare, I'm blocking out 10 a.m. till 1 p.m. to work on Ready or Not, Witching Hour and the Go-To Guides, those 2 days of the week. Then Hayden and I have also chatted that on some part of the weekend, he'll have both kids and I'll do 2 hours. So I think setting aside times and allocating times for things so that you can then focus is really good, because I was just finding that everything was bleeding into one up until last week when I started doing that. And a lot of this info I've actually got from our postpartum planning and return to work guide, because I've been implementing things like the family meeting where Hayes and I talk through the week, and I find it so helpful to know exactly where he'll be which days and vice versa. So that's another great tip for me, is to buy the postpartum and return to work planning guide, and you'll have a lot of great tips in there.
It is good. It is very good.
One more great tip here, going outside for a walk or doing something outside together. I think that's a really good one, because you're getting your fresh air. You're sort of reminded, without being too emotionally charged, about like the beauty of the world outside of on your fucking phone.
Yeah.
Get some fresh air, get some outdoor time. It always settles things down.
It does.
I asked two more questions that I nearly forgot to ask. One of them was wrong answers only to this. What the fuck did our mums do while breastfeeding without phones and iPads and Kindles? Wrong answers only, Lozzie. What were they doing?
I don't know, probably smoking.
I love that you say that, because someone said punching durries. Another person said smoked. Another person said cutting coupons from the local grocery store catalog. Someone else said, this is my Roman Empire. The person that said smoking durries actually said just ripped durries to pass the time, probably. Someone else said daydreamed about Harrison Ford. Someone else said watched Hey Hey at Saturday reruns.
Oh my God, yes.
Someone else said death stare at sleeping partners. Oh, I love these. And then the last one, thinking work or mentally spiraling into various aspects of mumhood. That's very likely too.
See?
So, you know, tech can be our friend in some ways. Last one that I'm going to touch on here. It was very timely that Rose Stokes, who's a mum and writer I follow on Instagram, she shared this screen grab from a conversation with a friend to her stories, where the friend said to her, had a bit of a showdown with a posh woman who stopped me in the street to tell me that my daughter was more important than my phone and I should think about talking to her.
Yuck.
So Rose added the context of how annoying that is, firstly, and that we all acknowledge that we don't want to be on our phones the whole time we're around our kids. Of course not. But, like, let's just give the mum a fucking break.
Shut up, Susan.
You have no idea what her day was like. Or you also have no idea that could have been the only minute of that pram walk that she had her bloody phone up. So I asked if anyone had experienced this firsthand. Someone said, walking pram facing away from me, old guy told me I'd regret being on my phone one day and I'd miss my son.
Shut up.
Fuck off, old man. I bet his name was Greg or something. Sorry if your dad's name's Greg and you're listening to this. I'm sure he's a good bloke.
I hate that.
And I'll just read one more here. But someone said, literally have this with husband weekly, but I swear he's on his phone 1,000 times more than I am. How annoying is that? Is when someone who's on their phone more than you says, put your phone away. And you're like, oh, fuck off.
Oh, it's so annoying. I once got stopped by someone. I was taking a photo of Sienna in the pram and she was like, oh, don't take a photo, just enjoy the moment. And I was ready. Like, you know, when you're like, oh, I'm ready.
Come at me, lady.
Yeah, I think I said something along the lines of, I'm taking the photo so I can relive the moment.
What a fuckwit. Like, and also I have been enjoying the moment. Does she know that it takes 1 second to take a photo? We're not going to the processing room to get those photos bloody printed the way they did back in the day. What do you call it? What are those rooms called?
I don't know. The black room, red room? What is it?
Like
I don't know what it's called. It's some color. I also think to myself though, you know when people say, oh, time is so precious, like enjoy this moment. Yeah, I agree. Every moment is precious.
Yeah.
So I'm enjoying my time on the phone while taking a photo, or
yeah,
I'll enjoy it in 5 minutes. Leave me alone.
Just fuck off. Like, just do not.
What moments are precious? So yeah. Just go away.
I'm the mummy here, not you.
So frustrating.
That concludes a very hot poll this week. Lozzie, give me a tip.
Okay, a tip. Actually, I saw this hack the other day and I tried it myself. I thought it was really good, so I wanted to share it. And this is actually about being on your phone, which is hilarious. I had not really known what that other segment would be. So this is funny. Use ChatGPT to come up with a personalized bedtime story for your child by typing in their name, favorite interest, and age. It is actually so good. You do have to be on your phone. I mean, you could print it out if you wanted to, but I thought this was really funny. Sienna the other day is 3.5. Sienna the other day. Well, not the other day. She is 3.5. She's growing every day.
She's 3.5 and a week this week. Or you're like one of those mums that still does weeks. You're like, she's 500 weeks old.
Oh, my. She's starting to demand stories about her or about unicorns or things that she likes. And I'm getting so over reading the same book again. I'm reading this awful book at the moment. I don't even want to say it so that people don't. I mean, I don't even want to draw
attention to it.
Attention to it because it's so bad.
And also just quickly on that, you're not going to stay very present if it's not engaging for you either. So keep going with your tip, but I love
fucking
it.
Fucking awful. It's awful. So I typed in Sienna, 3.5 years old, short story. I did specifically type that with unicorns and cupcakes and rainbows or something. And it came up with the cutest little story. And I actually read it to her off my phone. And I was saying, oh, imagine this. So there's a land, you know, there's a valley. And it was really cute. And I thought, do you know what? If you're one of those people that just don't have the imagination like I do.
Do you mean you don't have it either? Because you just made it sound like you have the imagination.
No, I don't. No, I meant as in if you don't have imagination, like I don't have imagination. Do it because it's so quick. It whipped it up in about a minute. And then we were sitting there, oh, you know, there's this girl called Sienna in magic fairy land. And today, she loved it.
That is so cool. I love that tip. It was very cute. I've already hinted on the fact that I've started to map out my weeks more and have that family meeting. But yes, that is my tip for this week too. It all is inspired by our postpartum and return to work planning guide. But blocking out my time and identifying how long everything takes in Ready or Not and Witching Hour has helped me heaps. So we now outsource the editing, but I still review the edits, add the intro grabs, record the intros, all of that sort of stuff. So I've identified how long each part of my paid work takes, which has been such a game changer, and then blocked out my weeks with paid work versus family time or life admin or whatever it else it is. And I've started to implement that family meeting, which is just one really valuable tool in this guide that is actually reducing, like quite genuinely hand on heart, reducing my anxiety levels each week when I try and think about what I have to tackle. On top of that, I'm making a list of what absolutely needs to be done each paid work day or each Ray daycare day, rather.
Yep.
And it's helping me so much. I, for the first time in so long, got through everything I needed to last week. And it's because I wrote down a list and I chipped away at it. So that's my tip.
See, these templates are useful. They're bloody useful.
Who would have thought we'd actually make something bloody useful? That's it for today, Lozzie. Sign us off.
That is it for today. If you have loved listening to today's episode, please leave us a review and follow us on Ready or Not. And if you would like to support our business, go to readyornot.au and purchase a go-to guide. They are fantastic. We have used them ourselves. Our friends have used them. We think they're great. We think you'll love them too.
And some really great early reviews. So go on Instagram if you want to see some genuine reviews from some purchases.